So, congratulations on making this far, Webbies. Congratulations, too. Glad you're out there. Lecture 28, December 7th, a day that will live in infamy. Lecture notes, page 275. Keep calm. It's the last one. Off we go. Support the animals. stunningly, when I checked today, the participation rate for the class evaluation, I got to double check this, I think I'm right, is 50%. Go, guys. Go, Webbies. So keep at it, but right now you've added 0.25% in extra credit to everyone's course grade. Get it up even higher. Why not? Help out those people right on the edge. So we've seen this before, lecture 28, last lecture. Test opens, final opens next Monday, closes next Thursday, should be plenty of time. Same info. So today we're hopefully going to get through chapter 20. If I don't, it creates one problem for me. If I do, it's good for me. If I don't, we'll talk about maybe the first part of chapter 21 on your end. We'll see. But that's that. So I have run all the grades, right? So there's all the averages across all the tests. The weighted class average for the grade for the whole class right now is 81%. So on average, you have a B minus. You're better or worse than that, but that's the overall average. In answering extra credit number 10, I see, I guess not all grades are in that one, still to come. Oh, I didn't count extra credit there anyhow. Still to come is tonight. So if you want that last bit of extra credit, other than the course evaluation extra credit, do that one before 11:59 tonight. We know the final exam dates. We know that this actually does cover our official time. We know all this stuff. Anyone have any questions on the final exam at this point in time? I'd be happy to answer them. If you don't feel you can abide by my rules and you need to be proctored in person, drop me an email. I'd be happy to sit with you and watch over your shoulder while you take the test. I'm sure that would be comforting. It's a good time to remind you about what I said in the first day of class about how the grades work here. Your final course grade is based on 13 weekly mini-tests. They count for 50% of grade, two midterms exams, 17% each, and a final exam, 16% of your course grade. There's the proper calculation. Add up all your mini-test scores, divide them by 13. A zero is a zero. Add it in there and divide by 13. Multiply by 0.5 to get that portion of your grade. Midterm 1, curved score, times 0.17. Midterm 2, curved score, times 0.17. And eventually the final exam score, curved, times 0.16, plus your extra credit points, gives you your grade. No test grades were dropped. We never talked about that. Sometimes people say, weren't we going to drop something? No, we never talked about dropping a test grade. I am not making any adjustments to your course grade. You get what you earn. So does everybody else in the class. I don't care if you're only 0.3, 0.2, or 0.1 away. Although I will respond politely, don't ask me. I'm not going to change your grade. It's unprofessional, it's cheating, and it hurts everybody else in the course. Earn the grade you want. So, there are no changes to final course grade. You get the grade you earned. Unless there's an error. Hey, if I made a mistake, and I just did recently, someone just wrote me and said something, blah, blah, blah. I'm in an error. I'll fix that, sure. Okay? Questions on how course grades work here. Whatever you get, you'll know that you earned. So, picking up with lecture notes, page 275 and page 546 in the textbook. That's the beginning of chapter 20, the next element in the promotion mix for us, and that is using social media to communicate with consumers. Lecture notes page, I guess, 277, it says. So, social media, well, you know, when I started talking about this, it was sort of new and huh, and what are we talking about? Less so now, but let's go back in time a little bit to a blogger recognizing the import and impact of social media. Kelly Clay is a blogger who writes about social media, startups, and technology trends. She had a terrible customer experience at a retail store. After failing to find jeans in her size at three different bricks and mortar locations of the same store, she gave up and purchased something else to satisfy her desire to just buy something. Now, in a separate study, we could find out if Kelly Clay has a bit of a buying problem. She didn't find what she wanted, but by golly, she was going to buy something. Anyhow, at the bottom of her receipt was an invitation to tweet at the store's chief marketing officer. And though she'd been blogging for several years by that time, she'd not yet joined the ranks of Twitter. Within an hour, she had written a scathing personal blog post about her experience, signed up for Twitter, and sent a tweet to that CMO with a link to her blog. Much to her surprise, she had a DM, direct message, from the company within minutes. And by the end of the week, the store had followed up with several phone calls and even shipped her a gift card so she could buy that pair of jeans in her size online. She was completely surprised at that level of customer service and has since advocated that brands need to leverage the power of Twitter as a platform to connect with customers. And the customers need to leverage this channel to connect with brands that are ready to listen and take action in ways that most customer call centers, hello, I have a question, don't do. The point, social media marketing can connect with customers. Who's ever, anybody here ever tweeted at a brand? Has anybody ever taken advantage of the perhaps brand listening to you? Nobody has. So I guess everyone's only had positive customer experiences, so no need to tweet. So what am I talking about when I talk about social media? These are technologies and platforms that enable social interactions, conversations, discussions, content sharing between multiple users on the web and or their mobile devices. So we talk about such things as social networking. Anybody still on Facebook? Do you guys still use Facebook? You and me, I guess, is it. Oh, and a little bit in the back. LinkedIn, you guys in LinkedIn? Every hand should go up, dog. It's Facebook for the employable. And Twitter, how many of you guys tweet on Twitter? How many of you guys have stopped tweeting on Twitter because of Elon Musk? Blogs and wikis, such as the Huffington Post and Wikipedia. Photos and video sharing sites such as Flickr and YouTube, and of course more, but you're familiar with these. There's the more, as of the last time I had that image available to me in 2021. So there are some of the things that we use for social media interactions with ourselves, with one another, and certainly that marketers and businesses use to communicate with us. We see here the historic share of time spent per day with major media by U.S. adults. And we see that in 2010, mostly people spent time on television. As of about 2012, however, digital crossed over in terms of time spent and continued to grow over time. We note that this could include multitasking. How many of you guys watch something on TV and are doing something on your notebook or whatever? So they're counting both of those. And still, digital far outzooms television, radio, and print. So again, those haven't quite gone to zero, but they continue to move downward. So there's the crossover. Growing share of Americans say they use YouTube through 2021. So there's a percent of U.S. adults who say they ever use, and YouTube is up at 81%. YouTubers, regular YouTubers. My wife finally had to stop. She had to cut herself off. She'd be standing there going through YouTube. Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, LinkedIn, Snapchat. Snapchatters? Hardly anybody. My kids love Snapchat. I hate it. By the time I see what it is and go to look at it and get my glass, it's gone, and I can't get it back. What are they doing? Stop it. Email is good. Thank you. WhatsApp, TikTok, Reddit, Nextdoor. Age gaps in Snapchat, Instagram use are particularly wide, less so for Facebook. So we see the youngest to oldest difference is smallest in Facebook, and as you can see, largest in Snapchat, because we old people can't follow what's going on, and it's gone. So it's obviously growing importance for marketers, right? Consumers are shifting their attention away from the passive consumption of traditional media, television, radio, print, and spending an increased amount of time on interactive social media. Brands are, of course, capitalizing on the shift by focusing their efforts on building an online fan base and seeking engagement from these fans. Think back to about week two when we talked about the various philosophies of marketing and the various ways of approaching it. We talked about the error of customer experience. And here's one way we're building experience and engagement with customers. Amplification of brand-related content allows brands to not only reach their fans, but also friends of their fans, which of course you know. You see something posted on one of your social media sites by a friend about a book or a movie or a restaurant, and suddenly you have that information too. Brands on Facebook have significantly increased their audience by as much as 81 times the number of their direct followers because of this interaction with friends of friends of friends. Social advertising provides lower ad costs when compared to traditional advertising methods. So here's a particular subset of social media advertising called U.S. native digital display ad spending. And we see that it is growing quite a bit over time through 2020. It can be targeted to reach an individual set of consumers in a target audience, harder to do with some of the other media we've talked about so far. And from a marketing viewpoint, you get real-time performance analysis to know whether your ad is working or not. One of our managerial marketing students, one of our majors, graduated a few years ago and went down here to the, I can't remember the name of the car supplier, I'm pointing in the direction where I pictured. There's a major national car parts supplier nearby. Anybody know what I'm talking about? I can't come up with a name. Doesn't matter. She went to them and she said it was fascinating. She was hired in to do search engine optimization, and she would watch the ebb and flow of people coming to searching for stuff relevant to auto parts and their site, and she could change the flow if she would update in real time the search engine terms, the long terms that were being used by people to search right now, and see what was happening. So marketers are able to do that. So in real time. So there's significant growth in spending in these areas. Social media can boost brand awareness. We've already said many times by now, consumers don't buy brands they're not aware of. So CMOs, chief marketing officers, are confident that social impacts awareness and loyalty. 82% agree it impacts brand awareness. 81.5% it impacts brand loyalty. 76% indicate that they believe it positively impacts sales as well. So it's a big deal. It can increase inbound traffic. For example, if your brand has an active blog, it makes it easy for you to connect with your audience with the help of fresh content. You can, if it's interesting enough, get them to share this content at the right time on Twitter or Facebook. Now your reach is increased, in this example, by 10 times. You're suddenly reaching out to a bigger audience that may like plus share your content, follow your brand, and ultimately, yay, become a consumer. When you create high-quality content that you can post on social media sites, you attract high converting inbound traffic. They were interested in what you had to say, your suggestion, your tip, your new brand feature, your new value offered. Appeals to them. They're coming to you because of that social media sharing. Yeah? Social media can help you to satisfy your consumers. Really important, not just from the viewpoint of social media, but in business, period. Losing a customer is hard on you. And gaining a customer is even harder. Retaining a customer by providing good value, good interaction, good experience is, this research says, 10 times easier than losing the customer. So customer satisfaction should be your topmost priority in general and when you think about social media. By using social media to connect with your customers, you have the opportunity to monitor what they want, understand the problems they're facing, and how you can serve them better. I mentioned before that over the years I used to take students to Europe. One of the places we went was Nestle's headquarters in Vevey, Switzerland. And early on, they always bring people from all over the world to their headquarters for a stint to learn the latest stuff. And we were there when they had three massive panels of video displays where they were monitoring in real time what people were saying about their brands right now, and they have a lot of brands, their response in real time back to those consumers. That was a set of panels, and I forget what the other panel was, responses to their response in real time. And they were trying to teach this idea of how to monitor in real time, watch for problems, respond to problems throughout the world for all their brands. So what is social media marketing? Social media marketing is the process of marketing through social media sites like Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. By utilizing the social aspect of the web, social media marketing is able to connect and interact on a much more personalized and changing, dynamic level than you can do through print, television, radio, traditional marketing. One goal of social media marketing is to produce content that users will share with their social network to help a company increase brand exposure and to broaden their customer reach. Have you ever seen something from a brand that you like, that you follow, a site that you went to, that they shared with you and shared it with others? Nobody has ever done that. One person is sort of nodding. Okay. In the rest of the world, people do that. So a social media marketing strategy can be as simple as having a company blog, a Twitter account, or attaching a dig this or tweet this tag to your article that you posted online. It can also be as complicated as having a full campaign that encompasses updated ongoing blogs, Twitter, social networking, and a set of viral videos that you get going through YouTube because they're so interesting and exciting. So there's lots of ways to approach this, simple to complex. Social media marketing gets direct consumer feedback because you're interacting with them on, say, Twitter. Makes the company personable. You have a brand image. You have an image of the company as they communicate through these various methods. It allows consumers to ask questions or, even more important, voice complaints. And if you are paying attention to what's going on, feel that they're being heard. This then is a key in social customer relationship management, social CRM, this idea of being in touch with the consumer and responding to them. It attracts attention and encourages readers to share that information, not in this classroom, but elsewhere in the world, with other people. And the resulting electronic word of mouth creates buzz, or if it's really cool, it can even go viral, which is a lot of free publicity for you, a lot of free promotion. The New York Times stormed the weekly viral video charts in January of 2018 with its The Truth Has a Voice campaign. That campaign also ran on TV during the Golden Globes, it's supposed to say. The effort, the latest iteration of the paper's The Truth Is Hard, is pegged to Times reporting on sexual harassment that has spawned a movement over 37 million views. Dove has had success with its Real Beauty campaign. Have you heard of the Dove Real Beauty campaign at all? Be yourself, be proud of who you are. This hashtag ChooseBeautiful ad had over 9 million views. That's pretty good viral play.
We had an option of two pathways to walk, and they led to two doorways.
Given the choice between a door labeled beautiful or a door labeled average, which would you choose? Dove's latest campaign set up entrances in Shanghai, San Francisco, London, Sao Paulo, and Delhi. They watched as women made the decision to walk through the beautiful door or the average door.
I went through the average door.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I didn't even hesitate.
漂亮对我的概念来说就是，像明星那种遥不可及的那种。我走的是一般。
Surprisingly, many women walked through the average door. In a recent survey by Dove, 96% of women do not choose the word beautiful to describe their appearance.
I walked into that door with said average and I didn't feel really good after that.
Todos os dias eu passo pela porta comum e ontem foi dia único e eu optei por passar pelo bonita.
The powerful results sparked a conversation about how women perceive their own beauty. And Dove wants them to be able to always choose beautiful.
I wanted to go through the average door, but my mom just pulled me over to the beautiful door.
Maybe I could walk in that door.
You can.
It was quite a triumphant feeling. It was like telling the world, I think I'm beautiful.
The hashtag ChooseBeautiful campaign sends a meaningful message, and we hope it helps to inspire women all over the world.
So this campaign was popular, went viral, had over 9 million views. What am I getting in trouble with here?
Hi, I'm Mike.
founder of DollarShaveClub.com. What is DollarShaveClub.com? Well, for $1 a month, we send high-quality razors right to your door. Yeah, $1. Are the blades any good? No. Our blades are f***ing great. Each razor has stainless steel blades and aloe vera lubricating strip and a pivot head. It's so gentle a toddler could use it. And do you like spending $20 a month on brand name razors? 19 go to Roger Federer. I'm good at tennis.
And do you think your razor needs a vibrating handle, a flashlight, a back scratcher, and 10 blades? Your handsome ass grandfather had one blade and polio. Looking good, pop up! Stop paying for shave tech you don't need. And stop forgetting to buy your blades every month. Alejandro and I are gonna ship them right to you. We're not just selling razors, we're also making new jobs. Alejandro, what were you doing last month?
Not working.
What are you doing now?
Working.
I'm no Vanderbilt, but this train makes hay. So stop forgetting to buy your blades every month and start deciding where you're gonna stack all those dollar bills I'm saving you. We are DollarShaveClub.com, and the party is on. I know karate, I know jiu-jitsu, I drive like a gangster when I'm coming to see you.
So, 39,000 subscribers, 151,000 likes, and 28 million views. Obviously, they're getting some bang for their social media buck, yeah? So, how's social media different from traditional marketing? Well, traditional marketing, like TV and radio and print and magazines and newspapers and direct marketing, all of which we've talked about, including mass mailing, are all outbound from the marketer, right, to the consumer. I choose the message, I send it to you, and in one of these media, you get it. Social media, like blogs and search engine optimization and social networks, try to attract social network users to the marketer's website. Why would anybody bother going to a marketer's website, be drawn to it? Because I'm providing you with something of value. I'm trying to create a community of followers. So rather than being pushed out from the marketer to you, we're drawing you in because we're providing interesting, valuable, funny stuff. So traditional media is costly compared to social media. So social media is cheaper, a lot cheaper. You can reach thousands of people for a fraction of the cost using social media compared to what it costs to get your message out in television, billboards, or even email. Social media is the only marketing platform that allows you to engage and interact with your consumers. It's a two-way relationship, which can be hugely lucrative for brands if they get a customer group who really sees value in them and they communicate with them. The results are measurable, and marketers can take immediate action to spot trends and realign their campaigns to what's going on in terms of consumer reaction. Why are my results here? But social media campaigns can be time-consuming. For example, if you are trying to stay active on what people are saying about your brands, any problems they have, you really have to be up there 24/7, 365 days a week. You don't have to do that with a print ad. You have to be ready to respond. The impact can disseminate very quickly, where some traditional marketing campaigns, certainly in television, can produce short-term results that have greater tangibility. They're around longer. We talked about that in particular with magazines. The social media stuff can come and go. Just depends. So what types of social media can we advertise on, market on? Social networks. Services allow you to connect with other people of similar interests and background. Usually consists of a profile, various ways to interact with others, the ability to set up groups. So we got Facebook, Instagram, WeChat, and LinkedIn. Bookmarking sites, services that allow you to save, organize, and manage links to various websites and resources around the internet. Most allow you to tag your links to make them easy to search and share, so delicious and stumble upon. Social media news and discussion groups, services that allow people to post various news items or links to outside articles and then allows the users to vote on those items. The voting is the core social aspect, as the items that get the most votes are displayed most prominently. Community decides which news items get seen by more people. Dig and Reddit would be two such examples. Anybody use Digger Reddit? Anybody use Delicious or StumbleUpon? Anybody use social media at all? Okay, just curious. All right. Media sharing, services that allow you to upload and share various media, such as pictures and videos. Most services have the additional social features, such as profiles and commenting. The most popular are YouTube, TikTok, Pinterest, Snapchat, Twitch, Flickr, and anybody on Clubhouse? You know what Clubhouse is? Have you heard of Clubhouse? Clubhouse is an invitation basis environment where, for example, celebrities, over time, they invite you to be there, and then they actually communicate with you one-on-one in this more limited social environment, Clubhouse. Microblogging, services that focus on short updates that are pushed out to anyone subscribed to them. I assume we do Twitter. Yes, Twitter? We do one. Oh, yeah, we said that a minute ago. Only two people are doing Twitter. Blog comments and forums. Online forums allow members to hold conversations by posting messages. Blog comments are similar, except they are attached to blogs and usually discussions center around the topic of the blog post. There are lots of popular blogs and forums. Fresh Home, sharing the most inspiring finds from the world of interior design, art, and architecture and lifestyle, had, last time I looked, almost 1.8 million likes on Facebook and thousands of subscribers at their website. Let's see if they are still up, running, and available. So here is one, 11 followers. That isn't what it used to be. Okay, I'm not sure what that's all about. Well, it was more last time I looked at it. But it's clear that just as you can't communicate in the same way across radio as you can on magazines or newspapers, you can't communicate in the same way on each of the platforms. Platforms have their own personality, have their own people that are likely to be there. A little while ago, we brought in Damon John. You know Damon John from Shark Tank? Yeah? To speak here at our 101st anniversary. And he chats a little bit about how he views social media and its use.
And I use all forms of technology. And I want people to be very clear. You cannot communicate the same way on every form of technology. When you look at your platforms, you can't talk the same way. LinkedIn, you know, you have to communicate like you are where we are today. We are networking. We're at a great conference. Everybody's business or business casual. And that's how you communicate. When you are on Instagram, you communicate like the cool kids in the park with the 20 mustaches and the tight pants. No problem. When you are on Facebook, you are in a family reunion. Make sure Nana, you are communicating the way Nana likes it and Aunt Mary. And when you're on Twitter, you are out in the park and it is going crazy out there and there's a whole bunch of random people there. You have to communicate certain ways. And I'm using these technologies in the form of Clubhouse and start speaking off and on there because what am I doing? I'm able to articulate a little more clearly where I'm going in life, what I believe, and how I can empower others. Because, yeah, you may see a tweet or you may see something else, but you may not be able to get the full value out of it because it's a couple of sentences or an image. And what do I get after that, after being on Clubhouse? I get more feedback, right, on what is working, what people need to know more of, what people do not like. That's how I'm using technology to communicate with my customer and also see who they are, what keeps them up at night, and you know, what do they think about me.
So we've talked before about the media exposure habits of your consumers. Where do they go when they're looking at stuff? And who is it that goes on Twitter? Who is it that goes on Facebook? Who is it that goes on these other sites? You have to craft your message for that target audience to make it make sense. So around the world, worldwide, there were 3.8 billion... social media users in January 2020, with this number increasing by more than 9%, 321 million new users from 2019. Globally, more than 5.19 billion people now use mobile phones, with the greatest user numbers up by 124 million over the past year. About a third of the world population is on social media, so out of a total population of 7.75 billion. You have 5.2 on mobile phones, 4.5 on the internet, and 3.8 billion people available to you on active social media sites. Could you sell them something? Maybe. What platform should you be on? Well, it goes back to what we just were talking about. We are, after all, trying to satisfy the needs, wants, and desires of a particular group of consumers, our target audience. So what are the social media habits of your target audience? I don't know. You got to know. Do they go on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok? What are your brand's long-term goals? Might also talk to you about which platform you should be on. And where are you now? What presence do you already have? How are you going to change that over? Are you going to suddenly drop out of Facebook? You got to think about that. So, as often with marketing, no single answer. What were the most popular social networking sites worldwide as of April 2021, ranked by number of active users? Facebook, YouTube, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, Instagram, and WeChat were the top ones. And then you can see TikTok, Douyin, QQ, Telegram, Snapchat, Sina, Weibo, some ones we haven't heard of. So there's the top list of the most popular networks worldwide. Of companies that you might not think of as being a huge modern social media presence, a brand that might not leap to mind is Oreo, but they are. Oreo is one of the best companies in the world in terms of social media marketing. Oreo recently concluded its highly successful 100-year anniversary program campaign, an effort that won the company numerous awards and garnered significant attention in social and traditional media sites. With a new Oreo campaign called Wonder-Filled, marketers are watching to see if the cookie company can continue its recent string of successes. One of the cornerstones of Oreo's 100-year anniversary campaign was the Oreo Daily Twist Initiative. Each day, for 100 days, Oreo released a cookie image that often played off on daily news events, with content including a Shark Week-themed Oreo, a Mars Rover Oreo. The promotion led to a very impressive four-fold increase in Facebook shares for Oreo. So that was quite exciting for them.
How does a product that hasn't changed a lick in 100 years find its way to the center of the cultural dialogue? It takes a lot of bravery and a little swagger. The strategy was to reimagine pop culture through the eyes of Oreo. We called it Daily Twist, an ambitious exercise in real-time culture jacking. 100 days, 100 twists. Oreo translated each piece of pop culture into shareable social content. Agency partners and brand stakeholders created a virtual newsroom, collaborating to create a new piece of content every single day. It was a risky move for our 100-year-old brand, but we believed in the power of real-time social content. See, it wasn't just about making stuff. It was about creating a platform for conversation. We made the content talkable. And people talked. And for the final twist, we handed it over to our fans to decide. Daily Twist became a living, breathing part of culture, just like Oreo has been for over a century. Some pretty important people noticed. From classic cookie to media darling, we've changed the way a new generation experiences Oreo, and we're just getting started.
Huge PR, huge involvement, customers getting involved, growing in shares. If I said to you, hey, what could we do for a cookie on the internet, in social media, I'm not sure you would have come up with this advice or this idea. Pretty good way for them to be successful in this new domain as an old brand. Another big win for Oreo and social media came in the form of the Oreo blackout tweet, capitalized on the temporary blackout at the Super Bowl in 2013, a clever social media post. Oreo's well-timed response resulted in 525 million earned media impressions for the brand and wildly expanded its visibility in the social media landscape. With audience attention high, Oreo followed the blackout tweet by asking fans to pick their favorite part of an Oreo cookie and make their opinion known via an Instagram post, complete with the hashtag, how many guys like Oreos at all? Oreos? How many guys like the cookie best? How many guys like the cream vest? Okay, you could have been engaged in this tweet with the hashtag cookie this or cream this. The promotion drew more than 46,000 submissions within 3 days. We had used those submissions to inspire 148 sculptures that were photographed and posted on Instagram to further extend the campaign. Oreo's efforts have produced results. Before the Oreo blackout tweet, company's Instagram followers were 2,200. Now, whatever time that was put up, it has grown to more than 85,000 followers for a cookie. Good job, Oreos. So, what are the key elements of your digital strategy? Well, connectivity. You need to know where your target audience is and be there. What are the media exposure habits of your consumers? Be wherever they are so that they can get to you, so they can come to you. Believability. You have to be honest, true. I'm sorry, am I going too fast? Just yell at me. Is that where we are? We're good? I see someone confused. You need to be credible and believable, or consumers won't share your message if you're just shilling for a product. Not a pleasant word from a marketing viewpoint. Consumers aren't going to share that. So you have to do something that's authentic, believable, credible. Getting users to create and share believable messages for your brand is a good thing if you can get it from users. Find ways to encourage users to interact with your site, to talk about your brand, and share that information out. Engagement. Have an idea to engage consumers, which will build community. Have your users come in and talk about which they prefer. Have them come in and rate different things. Have them come in and talk about your interesting daily post. Create places where consumers can interact with information that interests them. A custom microsite, a Facebook app, a brand site. And then put stuff on it that's creative and interesting to engage them. We haven't heard from Shane in a while. Shane, as you may remember, is an affiliate marketer. And he talks about being an affiliate marketer, having a brand information up that people will come and look for versus just general social media marketing. And so he'll talk about affiliate marketing as being a different digital strategy that provides information and builds trust.
Yeah, affiliate marketing has a role in social media. I think social media, the conversation is just different. My specialty is in search marketing, where people are searching for a solution to their problem. Social media is more like interruption marketing, where they're doing something else and you're kind of in their face with an offer. So they both have different places. In general, it's easier to sell something to someone who's already looking for it than interrupting their daily life. So as an affiliate marketer, it's easier for me to make a sale and build a business in the search world than the social media world.
Ah, that's it. So I thought you talked more about
it. Yeah.
I think we'll come back to him because I'm pretty sure he talks more about the idea of affiliate marketing and how it's just what he said, easier to sell people stuff when they're looking for it and they're coming to your site and they want to see differences in bow ties or air conditioners or pest control companies. They're already looking to buy and now you're going to recommend something to them. Believability plus engagement can help it, your message to go viral. So engaged, active users will share your story with the world in their own voice. And of course, other people trust influencers more than they trust brands in general. So you might get your message out there going viral. To benefit though, you have to change your view of the world. We're used to thinking about having control over the message, sending it out over radio, television, print, magazine, newspaper, whatever. Here, you have to recognize that it's the consumers that are in control. It's their voice, their messages that are going to be shared. You have to be where your consumers are looking. They find you through their search. You want to have conversations, not sales pitches. I went to one social media conference where they were saying, out of every 5 messages that you send out, useful, interesting, valuable messages, maybe one could sort of be a sales pitch. But people don't come back to your site if you're selling them, selling them, selling them, selling them, and selling them. It's boring. That's not what they're there for. So find creative, interesting stuff, and maybe every 5th one could be a sales pitch. Engage consumers, yeah, with what interests them, so they'll come back. Social media marketing in Dilbert. Beth is our new marketing manager for social media, says the stupid pointy-ear boss. By the way, Beth, company policy forbids the use of Facebook and Twitter at work. And we don't trust you to work from home. And if you blog about how lame we are, you're fired. Beth says, first day on the job, not so good. So not all companies are ready for social media. So social media can move beyond just interest and connectivity to generate sales, customer retention, and loyalty. By offering your customers the ability to connect with you and with each other, you can turn your target market into a community. And that sense of belonging to a community can increase their brand loyalty. Traditionally, we've talked about communities of people. I forget if I asked this question before. Anybody a biker, ride a motor snickle? Nobody? I gave it up a while ago, but oh, you do. So if you've heard of, in that world, the Harley-Davidson family, the Harley community, they've always been a community, and it's grown, in fact, through social media. Community and acquisition. Just as you can find out about a friend's interest and like on Facebook, your customer's network of others will know that they trust you and they are a loyal customer of your company. So the next time someone in their network is looking for a product or service you sell, remember, they'll remember your brand and be more likely to buy from you because their friends like you as well. Trust and user-generated content. Social media can help you develop powerful, compelling content that resonates with your customers through their generated content, through user-generated content. When you open up your products to user reviews, you send a message that you have nothing to hide or fear, and that helps the customer to trust your brand more. By giving customers access to independent third-party feedback, you're helping them to make better purchasing decisions, and when a consumer is more comfortable, they're more likely to buy. And I think I commented, I forget what I was looking for, maybe looking at a vacation rental house and for the family, and there were no reviews on the house. Man, I just skipped right over that one. Nobody has anything to say about this house, or you're not posting reviews, forget about it. Search engine optimization and acquisition, a side effect of opening up your products to community activity and user-generated content, is that you increase your chance of ranking on all kinds of medium to long tail keywords. That is to say, when people are looking for vacation rentals in June in Rehoboth Beach, Maryland, you're more likely to show up because of that engagement you have with other customers in that domain. This means you increase your chance of reaching out to targeted users who already have made the decision to buy, are actively searching for products and services. It can, in fact, drive foot traffic to your bricks and mortar store. Social media can drive traffic to your store. The web has gone mobile, and so is social networking. More and more of what users are doing are location-based, and that means you can reach out to potential customers who are quite literally just around the corner. How often have you ever on the fly said, I don't know what it is, fast food near me, buy a shirt near me, whatever, gas station near me? On the fly, they're reaching out to you because they're out there, and off you go to their site. The social network Foursquare allows users to check in to physical locations, such as a cafe, through their mobile phones. Their personal network is then updated about their physical location, and we see someone we trust frequents a certain point of sale store, a bricks and mortar store. We're curious to check it out, and we might actually do that. How do we know if we're being successful in our world of social media? Well, translating traditional return on investment metrics into the social media realm looks like this. We think about return on engagement. How long are people spending either in conversation about your brand or interacting with objects you've put up? And what's happened out there as a result of this engagement? Return on participation. This is a metric that's tied to measuring and valuing the time spent participating in social media through conversations or the creation of social objects. Your users are doing reviews. That's participation. How much, how often. Return on involvement, like participation, touch points for documenting states of interaction, and tie-in metrics that tie to the potential return of each of these involvements. Return on attention. In the attention economy, we assess the means to seize attention, hold it, and measure the response. Actually, one of the criticisms of places like TikTok is they do grab your attention and won't let you go. How many of you guys have found yourself scrolling through TikTok for too long and say, wait, I got to stop that? It's good for the marketer, not necessarily good for society at large. Return on trust, a variant on measuring customer loyalty and the likelihood for referrals. A trust barometer establishes the state of trust earned in social media engagement and the prospect of generating advocacy and how it impacts future business. These are not traditional return on investment measures for traditional campaigns, so we have to rethink how we're measuring our success. So, what are the five phases of social media measurement? First of all, for obvious reasons, exposure. People don't buy things they're not aware of. If they aren't even exposed to you, you're losing. So first of all, you have to make sure that they are aware of you. They're exposed to your message, your site. Season visits, views, followers, fans, subscribers, and brand mentions. Then we move down to the idea of influence compared to your competition. What share of voice do you have out there? How do consumers feel about you? What's the sentiment? What are your top influencers saying? How many are there? Engagement from your target market. Are people clicking? Are they retweeting? Are they sharing? Are they replying? Are they DMing? Are they posting? Are they commenting? Are they engaged? And then down to action or conversion. Are they signing up for your brochure, for your white paper, for a free trial? Are they going to your online store and buying? Are they attending your webinar? Are they downloading your content? And of course, that's all leading to online sales and or phone sales. Then you track, repeat business, retain it, and start all over again. So that's the way we think about it, from the broad level exposure down to the actual conversion to a purchase. Now, your analysis is important, but it also has to be smart. So this is a little humorous play on a company that's not being very smart about their analytics, and a company that will help them to be smart.
Peter, come take a look at this.
Mr. Daniels. Look at this.
The numbers, they keep getting bigger and bigger.
Clicks are off the charts.
Yeah.
Yoshi, it's Walter. We're back.
Yes, sir! Number here! More shifting!
I need more trees!
More trees? I'll get you more trees!
Hey, take a look at Wood Pulp.
Whoa. Everything you got at Wood Pulp right now.
He really loves that thing.
And Adobe Marketing Cloud will help you to be smart about your analytics, right? So, yeah, it's important to measure, but you have to do so wisely. There are a lot of dangers out there in the big, bad world of social media marketing, as I imagine you know. Cybersecurity is important. This was actually sent to me by one of my students a while ago. I'm an IT manager for a major Fortune 500 company, and much of my time over the last year has been dedicated to protecting my company from, removing the effects of, and educating my user base about the dangers of internet hacking and cyber exploits. One of the most prevalent currently and pertinent to our marketing topic is the proliferation of drive-by downloads or drive-by hacking via a subverted internet advertising site. Some of my users were recently infected with malware originating from a short-duration compromise on Yahoo, on a search page, which was embedded in a fake advertisement. It's becoming increasingly difficult for legitimate advertisers to protect against this type of malicious content and will become an area of greater focus for those advertisers that wish to continue playing in that arena. You don't want to be the brand whose site was compromised or hacked, and therefore people click on your site were downloading malware and other sorts of bad viruses, right? So we don't have very many CISIS computer people, do we? Again, I need you out there stopping this stuff from me. You're a busy guy for me. Thank you. Chances are you know not to open that email attachment from the Nigerian prince who wants to give you $100,000. I haven't heard from him in a while. Have you guys ever seen that email? One like it? Yeah? You know not to click on that. Give him your bank account so he can send you the money. But a hack of some NBC.com sites on Thursday, 2014, proves you can accidentally download malware even when visiting a reputable site. Infecting computers with malware when they navigate to a site is called drive-by download. Cybersecurity experts are saying it's a growing and terrifying attack technique. Users who are simply surfing the web can unwittingly stumble upon a hacked site, which may look completely normal. So clearly, marketing organizations have to be aware of these issues and diligently work to protect their customers. You're trying to provide value, not hacks, viruses, and downloads. So be aware of that. Also, we have the problem of inappropriate or accidental posts being done. U.S. Airways has offered an explanation and another apology after a pornographic image was shared from the airline's official Twitter account. The airline carrier said the photo was sent accidentally to one of its customers who launched a series of complaints about the airline that day. The image featured a woman posing with a toy plane inserted in an inappropriate part of her anatomy. Whenever I read that sentence, I'm thinking, is it an appropriate part of your, never mind. We apologize for the inappropriate image we recently shared in a Twitter response. We deeply regret the mistake, and we're currently reviewing our processes to protect such errors in the future. Yeah. Airline representatives said the image was sent to the airline's Twitter account by another user. Employees in charge of the airline's Twitter account meant to flag the image as inappropriate, but oops, included it in part of their reply. Who's watching over your people? Let's see what that image looks like. No, I'm not going to.
It's an epic Twitter fail, right? It had U.S. Airways apologizing after a lewd photo, I mean, we're talking about lewd, was posted to their Twitter feed. The company released a statement saying the image was inadvertently included in a response to a customer. I mean, it was so X-rated, it could have been in a porno. It probably was in a porno. Yeah, really. Now, this is not the first time a big company is trying to save face after big social media blunders. So we have a roundup of some of the major Twitter mistakes out there and social media and everything. So we have expert Peter Shankman with us. Thanks so much for being
here,
Peter.
Good morning.
Okay, so let's just start by talking about this picture. We cannot show the picture.
No. We don't ever want to see the picture again.
We can barely describe the picture on morning television, but we can show you some of the responses that have come to the picture on Twitter. All right, so this is one of the first responses, if we can put it up right there, and we'll show you. And it says, who put this guy in charge of U.S. Airways Twitter account? I thought that was pretty funny, and you see that little dummy there because it was a big... Peter's laughing about that. Hopefully you are, too. Yeah, and there's one more response I want to show you here. Let's see. We can pop it up. Turns out U.S. Airways has way more destinations than we ever imagined. We don't ever want to see that airplane had a layover. Either someone at U.S. Airways is terrible at doing their job or incredible
good at quitting,
quitting their job. It's bad. It's bad.
You know, when you have a service that goes out to millions of people, of people without without a safe check, you know, I mean, you have to be very aware of what you're saying at any given time. There will be screw-ups. There will be screw-ups that are hacks. There will be screw-ups that are just screw-ups. But this was a mistake.
Yeah, but this is kind of funny because the customer is just calling to complain, really, or just writing or tweeting to complain, saying, you ruined my spring break. I want some free stuff. And then...
ruined a lot more than spring break for a lot of people.
Right. I mean, it probably happened in spring break. But what I'm saying is that, you know, talk about a major blunder. Why wasn't there any fail safes?
Well, you know, look, when you're dealing in real time, which Twitter is real time, and it's the same reason that celebrities screw up all the time. If you don't have a handler, if you don't have a middle person checking things out, you're going to make mistakes. I've done it. We've all tweeted things that we wish we hadn't, or we typed something wrong, or a typo has come in that looked wrong. The end result is that you're pressed for time, you're looking, you know, it is an immediate response. There are protocols in place to prevent this, and look, U.S. Air sends out hundreds of tweets a week, if not thousands. You know, a lot of them are, hey, sorry we're late, sorry our flight's late, sorry our flight's late, sorry our flight's late. This one, somehow it got through. Now, from what I heard, this was a tweet that was actually sent to American Airlines. And then what probably happened is the social media person there, who also monitors all the other airlines' feeds, American, United, things like that, saw this, probably saved it to send it to some buddies, said, oh my God, look what they sent to American. And then inadvertently, when he saved it, the line of the image was copied to his cut and paste. Uh-huh. And he probably, in an effort to try and pick, because, you know, look, when you're doing this every day, sorry, if you have a problem, please post your comments
here.
He probably just forgot that he had something else in his paste queue, and that's what he sent.
Whoops. Okay, we have about 30 seconds left, so we should probably run through some of the other major fails that we've seen. I know Chrysler, they had a bad one.
Yeah, they had an agency working for them that made the mistake of tweeting, you know, you can tweet from multiple accounts. Instead of tweeting from the guy's personal account, he tweeted from the Chrysler account and said, wow, no one in Detroit can effing drive. Not too good coming from a car company.
Please don't drop an F-bomb. Yeah. Also, Epicurious did something.
Yeah, Epicurious, after the Boston bombings about a year ago, they said, you know, our hearts are with Boston. Here's a recipe to make you fit. Never promote your product a problem or, you know, some sort of tragedy. Never promote your product around that.
And Mickey D's?
Mickey D's account was hacked, switched over to Burger King. I'm sorry, Burger King's account was hacked, switched over to McDonald's, and they tweeted a photo of someone shooting up heroin in the bathroom and says, this is what our employees do. So you really, you know, you got to be careful. Make sure you use LastPass or something like that. Make sure you have a good password. Your password should not be password 1. Yeah. It should not be password 2.
Yeah.
It should be lots of letters and numbers. Make sure your account is safe. These things are live and they go out for millions of people.
Peter Shackman, thank you so much for coming in. And you know what? Lessons learned. Lessons learned,
we
everybody.
Copy paste.
Exactly. Do not copy paste.
Whoops.
And don't fall off this chair. Thank you.
All so right. You do want to get active. You do want to be out there. You do want hundreds or thousands of people talking about your site. Not for this reason, though. Careful what goes out. Be aware of what's happening. If you want to know more about affiliate marketing, I guess I don't have him talk more. There's Shane's site. You can join his Facebook group and learn how to build a successful blogging business. So a little shill for him. My kid actually followed his advice and in the background runs an HVAC affiliate marketing site. I might have mentioned that. If you want to know more, social media landscape in 2020, there's a podcast. And we have marketing 35 of 56, social media marketing. And coming in the spring, we saw a promotion for that. We have digital marketing as well. Yay me, because I get to force you over to the last chapter. So we get to the final element that we were going to talk about of the promotional mix elements. And that is the idea of personal selling. We weren't going to talk about, and won't now, talk about sales management. So this course will only consider personal selling up to page 591 in chapter 1, and we should be on lecture notes 289. So, personal selling, pretty important in marketing. It is one of the promotional methods. In this case, it's a promotional method in which one party, the salesperson, uses their skills and techniques for building personal relationships with another party, those involved in a purchase decision. And of course, because we're in marketing, back to week one, that results in both parties obtaining value. The person buying the product or service, the company, your hard-earned money. So there I am bolding up, as I mentioned maybe last time, the differences between this and other things. Personal selling is the two-way, interactive, flow of paid communication between a buyer and an identified seller, often in a face-to-face encounter designed to influence a person's or a group's purchase decision. It's a good way to earn money. This is, again, not updated recently, but 2019, the annual average wage for the overall sales area was $43,000 with a 90 percentile at $81,000. But when you get a little more refined for sales reps, wholesale and manufacturing and technical scientific products, the annual average wage, $92,000. At the 90 percentile, $158,000. You could probably scrape by on that for a year, yeah? $158,000? No? For those engaged in other than wholesale manufacturing and technical scientific products, annual salary in 2019 dollars, $71,000, 90% to $125K. During the pandemic, we ran into some interesting problems trying to sell. Sales is best defined as helping clients succeed. When we help our clients succeed, we succeed as well. So how can salespeople survive or even come out stronger during this disruption of the pandemic? First, learn how to excel at the remote sale. Think about how to turn everything virtual. So if you're doing a corporate tour normally, will you show your clients your facilities and capabilities? Move it online. Do a video. Get those things out there fast. Divert all the attention to existing accounts during the pandemic. Stop pursuing new business when you can't be there in person. After all, people buy from you because of trust, and it's harder to establish trust when people can't reach you in person. Again, I'm going to have to change these slides a bit as the pandemic sort of dwindles away from us. There's one skill we always need to work on in personal selling. Even more critical is listening. You want to talk with consumers rather than using a slide deck. You really don't know if the client is focused on a PowerPoint over the phone, and if you're situationally conversing, talking to them in person in real time, you're at least understanding if they're distracted or you have a solid interaction and engagement. And use meeting time well. Have a planner. Don't wing it. Be sure that you're listening and asking questions. So the challenge to leaders is to turn this crisis of the pandemic into an opportunity where you think about new ways to connect with your current clients to help them solve their problems. More listening as a salesperson, less talking, get your people to help they need to do their jobs more efficiently. Sales management, which I'm not going to talk about, I'm just going to mention, is the planning the selling program, implementing and controlling personal selling effort of the firm. Salespeople do one of the things we say marketing is all about. They create customer value. They help customers to identify problems and coming up with creative solutions to them. Remember, discovery and satisfaction of consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit through an integrated effort of the firm. And I got to say, how many people would never want to be in sales? I'm never going to be a salesperson. I don't want to sell anything. No, thank you. Only one? I'm impressed. All through life, you'll be engaged in personal sales, whether it's that personal sales to get that first job, personal sales to get that first date, personal sales to get that promotion, personal selling to do your presentation in a way that the higher folks will. So there's internal personal selling as well, and you're trying to help them solve their problem. It's a good way to make a good living. Assist the customer with the buying process. Provide follow-up after the sale. If you're working for an honest company that honestly provides value, honestly has services or products that help that client, and you're helping that client to succeed, you should feel good about yourself. You're actually providing value in a one-on-one situation. Salespeople can't help build long-term customer relations. In relationship selling, you build ties to customers based on your attention and commitment to that customer's needs over time. In partnership selling or enterprise selling, you have a situation where you work with customers to combine their expertise and resources with your own companies to create customized solutions for them, commit to joint planning with them, share customer competitive and company information with them for your mutual benefit, ultimately providing value for that client, for that customer, having a good relationship with them. And when you have that relationship, it's hard for somebody else to come into the company and say, oh, I got a better price, come with me. Wait a minute, you don't have all these other things that this company is providing. There are different types of sales roles. The one that requires least skill and professional talent is order taking. So this is primarily assisting customers making a purchase. It's probably the greatest number of people engaged in selling. Compensation for order takers is generally lower than it is for other types of sales roles. So that retail store clerk doesn't need a college degree to help you buy that carton of beer. Industrial distributor clerks, likewise, doesn't need to be highly educated to help you buy that box of bolts. Some customer service is also considered at this level of order takers. The obvious is important. People do need help buying stuff, but it's not the most skilled type of sales. Order getters are those who are actively engaged in using their skills to obtain orders from customers. For example, going out into a territory and coming up with new business that's never been purchased from your company again, that's challenging. That's hard. It can be lucrative if you bring in a customer to your company. You can earn good bucks from doing that. And your main objective is to find new customers. Sales jobs in this category are often in fields that are very competitive, but offer high rewards for those that are successful. So again, you're trying to get out, find new companies, and show them what value you can provide. Order getters occur in things like business equipment sales. It's used in industries where a company's main profits come from the sale of supplies and services after the initial equipment purchase. So if you're selling a copier to a company like Canon, Kyocera, and Xerox do, you get them to purchase that big piece of equipment, and then you have ongoing flow of income or revenue from the services and supplies that are needed for that equipment to function. And businesses use copiers. Outgoing telemarketing is another kind of order getter. Product sales over the phone, either to businesses, more common today, or consumers, harder to do today. As you know, U.S. laws restrict unsolicited phone calls to customers, but it is still used in the B2B world. Consumer selling, some companies do use salespeople to build new customer business. Retailers selling certain high-end consumer products. So when you go into a furniture store, you're likely to run into a salesperson. Electronics, some up-end clothing stores. Housing products, including real estate. Most of us don't want to go out and figure out all the intricacies of buying a house and getting them checked and the legal elements by ourselves. Security services, building replacement products, windows, etc. In-home product sellers, we've talked about those previously, selling door-to-door, at-home parties, cosmetics, kitchenware, decorative products. Account management is the idea of building customer relationships. You're responsible from that first sale all the way through the purchase process to the sale to follow up account servicing. Business-to-business selling, these salespeople sell products for business use with an emphasis on follow-up sales. Their company may have a variety of different items to sell, and so after the initial sale, you're in there trying to show other valuable product lines that the company can buy. Patrick Gorgon over at Protégé talks about moving into this role. Let's hear what he has to say about being an account manager.
So I joined Protégé as an account manager. In general, with account management, what that means is that you're going to be working with an established contact or customer and working with them oftentimes in a project basis. So that with Protégé, I might work with a client 10 times in a year. I might work with them 100 times in a year. And so you definitely want to make sure that you're helping them achieve their goals. So having meetings around what their initiatives are, what are they struggling with, what would it look like for them to be more successful in their position. In this case, it was collecting those consumer insights for researchers. So that's what I was helping them identify and talking to how we can help them achieve that. So that's kind of like maintaining the relationship. But that would only be 60% of the job, because the other 40% is that you want to also expand that relationship. You don't want the account to be stagnant and not be growing year over year. And so that's where we would go fly across the country, do different events with them, or take them out to dinner, bring them lunch, have meetings, really just kind of trying to stand out from, you know, say our competitors who might just be hiding behind email. Of course, you know, we're all human, so having that personal connection really helps, as simple as it sounds. I saw it make a big difference in my role. There were several instances where, say, I was working with a project manager or procurement specialist that was in charge of managing their panels. That was great, but that person might not be privy to information that's coming from the top, say with like the C-level team. So then that's where you really need to expand relationships within that account to make sure that you're touching base with everybody, seeing what initiatives they've got coming up so that you can kind of stay ahead of all the trends that they've got on their end.
So he's out there, he's building relationships, maintaining relationships, growing relationships, aware of the folks in the buying center, and then finding out when there are new people that he has to talk to be successful. Order getters include account management, a push approach. Sales professionals work for consumer products companies, normally don't sell out to you, the final consumer. They instead focus on getting channel members, distributors, or wholesalers, retailers to handle the products, and then they help those folks to sell their products by offering ideas for product advertising, in-store display, sales promotion. Order influencers or missionary sales don't engage in direct selling activities. Rather, they concentrate on selling activities that target those who influence purchases made by the final consumer. So doctors don't typically sell you drugs directly, but rather they make recommendations, and those recommendations to you are fulfilled by the local pharmacist. So salespeople known as product detailers discuss products with doctors who then write prescriptions for their patients, and pharmaceutical sales as a missionary sales can be quite good. In higher education, of course, they don't sell you the book directly. They talk to me as an influencer. I make the requirements for you, the final customer, for specific books, another form of missionary sales. Technical specialists, if you're selling a technical product, you certainly want, you're selling an oil rig, you're selling a major elevator, you're selling a major commercial refrigeration unit, a industrial computer. You want technical people there, and those are the technical specialists that help talk to folks in the buying center that are the technical folks, and so that's support. Office support, the salespeople don't want to waste their time doing these mundane things. They want to be out selling, so office support helps with promotional materials, setting up sales appointments, finding sales leads, all important, but they don't want to be doing it, arranging meeting space, organizing trade show exhibits. Sometimes if you're an intern in a sales organization, you might start by providing office support for the salespeople. I'm going to skip the trends for now because I want to get to the last topic. And so what I do want you to do for the final in the book is to get through the personal selling process. It consists of sales activities that occur before and after the sale itself, consisting of six stages: prospecting, trying to find good people to sell to; pre-approach, planning what you're going to say, present them with; approach, first meeting them and greeting them; presentation, talking about what you're offering and listening to what their needs, wants, and desires are; closing, which is various ways of asking for the sale; and follow-up after the sale. Since I don't have enough time to do it from the lecture notes, wherever we are right now, you can say end here on the lecture notes, but take a note, follow the through follow-up in the textbook. Does that make sense? Open notes, open book, you'll be able to study from the textbook. I'll type that out as I instruct you what to do for the final exam. Let me say if I have it here. So, a brief recap of our 15 weeks together. You recall that marketing is product, price, price, promotion, with the consumer as the focus, paying attention to the CREST factors: competition, regulatory, social, economic, and technology. So our goal is to discover and satisfaction in consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit, or to attain your organizational goals through the four P's of the marketing with an integrated effort of the firm. You ought to say, yes, yes, of course, that's what we've been talking about. With strategic brand segmentation, targeting, and positioning, you remember STP as concepts, I hope. And you have some idea of this overall framework that we constantly referred back to, from the 30,000-foot level above what people do every day to the 10,000-foot level of developing the marketing mix. And hopefully that has meaning to you as well. So, thanks for the opportunity to work on Principles of Marketing with you. Good luck on the final. Do study for it. And best wishes in your future career. That's all, folks. Bye-bye.